This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Winter is coming. Yes, we're in the hottest part of the summer, but still, winter is coming, and there are still a lot of questions about the status of the Texas power grid. The Valentine's winter storm power failure wasn't that long ago, and we were promised by state leaders that they had learned their lesson and they will keep Texans safe with reforms. Well, did that actually happen? We're going to be talking about that this half hour. You can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Have questions about the status of the power grid and who's going to pay for this? You can also tweet at us at TPRSource. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. And that call-in number, 833-877-8255. You can text us at that number as well. We're joined by Mose Bushell, a familiar voice and name to public radio listeners. He's a senior correspondent for energy and the environment at KUT Austin, host of the podcast, The Disconnect, Power, Politics, and the Texas Blackout. Mose, welcome back to The Source.
Thanks, Dave.
Also with us, Varun Rai, PhD, LBJ School Associate Dean for Research, Professor of Public Affairs and Director of the Energy Institute at the University of Texas at Austin. And Dr. Rai, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
So, Mose Bushell, how should we be feeling about the grid?
Well, that's an interesting question. I suppose as we approach winter, I think it's probably natural to be a little bit trepidatious, considering what we went through in February. We had a relatively mild summer. And, you know, after this blackout, we had a couple of close calls where there were conservation calls on the grid, and people were nervous once we were going to hit August, have these, you know, massive triple-digit days that we've unfortunately become used to here in the state, how the grid would respond. But what we ended up getting was a relatively mild summer statewide, and so the electric system wasn't tested to the level that some people thought it might be through the summer heat, and now, again, we enter winter, where we may also see a lot of electric use, and we might see the grid being tested again.
Varun Rai, I was looking at those reports coming from ERCOT, looking at those graphs, seeing power usage, available power. They were getting, those lines were getting really close, and going, I don't know about today. Could be a tough one. I was feeling a little stress. There were some power outages across the state, but not widespread. What's your takeaway?
Totally, Dave. Some bit of trepidation is quite natural given what we experienced in February. It was, you know, difficult. It's only been a few months, and the memory is fresh in the mind of, you know, millions of Texans. So I agree with Mose that we are going into the winter season really not fully knowing what to expect. That said, and hopefully we'll discuss more on it, there has been good progress made, and so there is reason for hope. But also, it's not a completely done deal, and there is some bit of uncertainty that remains.
Right. So we did have a press conference on June 8th where Governor Greg Abbott signed two bills establishing rules for the weatherization of power plants and transmission lines in Texas. And Governor Abbott told everyone, this is a quote, everything that needed to be done was done to fix the power grid in Texas. Is that true, Mose?
I mean, I don't think there's anybody else, you know, who's not. I don't think there's anybody who's not friends with the governor who would say that that's a completely accurate statement. There were obviously more things they could have done. They did take some steps towards trying to improve reliability, but most people, if not everybody I talk to, I guess, thinks that there are other things they could have done that they didn't. So to say that everything was done is just seems like more of a political statement than a statement of pure fact, right?
But so, Mose, is the problem, like we talk about winterization, so we had these gas wellheads and other things that froze during the winter storm. And, of course, we had 10 years ago, there was a similar incident, and they could have fixed it then, but they didn't. But so is it a physical problem? All we got to do is just fix these wellheads so they don't freeze over and we're golden, we're good. Or is it the market? Did the market need to be reformed?
Both, probably. I mean, and this is really one of the tricky things about understanding the grid in Texas and reporting on it, right? I mean, we think of a grid as a piece of infrastructure, like a really big, complicated piece of infrastructure. But what we also have in Texas is that this grid is a market. It is a market where electricity is generated, sold, and bought and distributed. And the way that market operates dictates how much electricity is actually available to us. So when we were confronted by this catastrophic failure, it was both a failure of the physical infrastructure and now it seems almost a point of universal agreement that it was also a market failure. It's fascinating to see how quickly, just in a matter of months, you had people who probably would have defended our system, 8 months ago, now acknowledging the fact that this represented a big failure in the way that our competitive market works. What's happening now is that these state agencies, these groups that get much less attention than state legislators at the Capitol, are working through the laws passed by our state lawmakers and crafting rules, new rules and regulations that they say will help fix some of the things that went wrong. But they're still in the process of that, and it's difficult to know exactly where that's going to land.
And Varun Rai, the market situation with Texas Power. It's a business, it's not a charity. They need to make a dollar, but some people made billions of dollars off of the winter storm. Is that a concern?
The hard fact, Dave, is that, you know, that's how the world of business works. A lot of parts of our world economy operate that way. I don't think that is the problem per se. If you take a step back and what are we dealing with? So energy in part, maybe large parts, is a commodity, but in very fundamental parts, it's also a utility, right? You know, there are some very basic needs that is provided for through electricity for people and businesses. And that's where it becomes tricky, right? And that's where the core of this whole discussion and the whole revisit after what we faced in February has been, are we after super competitive markets that give you the lowest price, but then cannot supply you with electricity when you need it to even just, basically survive, leading to hundreds of deaths and, tens of billions of dollars in losses. So that's the core of the discussion. I do think that, irrespective of whether, the whole problem has been solved and all that needed to be, I do think that the core of the discussion and the spirit of the approach to solving it has shifted fundamentally away from focusing only on the dollar value, only on the cost and the price, to, in a very important way, the reliability and the service that we expect and need to provide to our masses and businesses.
And that's what these elected leaders are supposed to try and to figure out. But then again, there's a lot more lobbyists who want to keep the money flowing than there are people who are saying, I want my lights on. And so, Varun, that seems to be an imbalance.
And that is also another reality of our political system, Dave. That is how much of policymaking actually works. There are lots of merits to it, and there are also disadvantages. Modern democracies of our size and that in many other parts of the world are very, very complex systems, and there is role for many important stakeholders, including the lobbying process. I think, where the balance lands, I think Mo's raised a very important point, which is, it is hard to say where this all lands, right? So taking a step back again, there is a lot of very good progress that has come out through the last leg. So in particular, State Bill SB3, lots of positive changes, right, around emergency communication and coordination of, communication weatherization, both in the power system as well as power-related gas system. Power for water treatment and supply, and there are multiple other things, including load shedding, scheduling, and databases, and whatnot.
Okay, so we're going to talk more about that when we come back from this break. We're talking about the Texas legislature's reform to the Texas grid. Did they get it right? The number to call in is 833-877-8255. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In the next half hour, we're going to be talking about climate change and how it impacts the most vulnerable of us, low income and communities of color, why that is and what needs to change on that. That's in the next half hour of The Source. Right now, we're talking about the Texas power grid. If you've got a question or a comment, you can call in 833-TPR-TALK. So Mose Bushell, and you have this podcast. It's a really entertaining, interesting podcast, The Disconnect, Power and Politics in the Texas Blackout. In some ways, I'm very envious of you. In other ways, I'm like, I wouldn't wish that job on my enemy, because like you had to go into the dystopian world to try to figure out how Texas keeps the lights on. And, you know, in this, and the bottom line is that this is a market driven sort of a solution, and that can put you in some unusual places. And I really don't understand, and maybe I don't have this right or not, and help me figure this out. When they raised the cap for the price of natural gas during the Valentine winter storm, they allowed that cap to stay off for quite some time, probably longer than it had to be, and that ended up costing Texans billions and billions of dollars.
Right, and in fact, what you know, if we're talking about the energy cap, it was actually on kilowatts, right? It was on electricity. The story with natural gas is actually maybe even more surprising, which is that there is no cap, right? Like natural gas exists in Texas as a completely open market. The price of gas are essentially based on, deals, often secret deals between buyers and sellers that are strictly driven by one person's desire or in the case of the blackout, desperation to get gas. And the seller's desire to make as much money as possible off of it. So both in the electric sector and in the gas sector, you had prices reaching basically unheard of levels at the same time that the state was undergoing this energy crisis. And, you know, that does not, frankly, sit well, I think, with most people that look at it, because we often hear this framed in terms of who lost money in this crisis. But as you've pointed out, Dave, there are also companies that made a ton of money, that profited off of this. And that financial fallout is part of what our state regulators are now dealing with. And the degree to which the next power crisis, if it comes, will lead to similar financial fallout is going to depend on what they do and how they change the system.
So Varun Rai, the marketplace-based solution to a public utility. We're told that we deregulated Texas energy markets, and that's great when the system works. So is that going to help us when the system doesn't work?
One thing I would like to remind us that market-based doesn't mean without guide rails and, you know, completely as a fair. No, that's not the case. You know, markets operate under constructs that are provided through by policy and then implemented through regulation, and that has also been true in the quote unquote deregulated market in Texas. You know, it's been underregulated, as we have learned in the aftermath, and as we have seen the policies try to fix and the rulemaking that is going on in the commission. But it's always been regulated. Now the question that you posed, Dave, is a very fundamental one. Is it going to work? Is it going to help? Well, you know, it has helped us in many ways. So, for example, the choice of different types of rates that exist in many parts of Texas and the technological solutions and innovation that it brings both on the demand side for customers as well on the supply side, including a more diverse generation system. Those are all good things that happen through the power of market. Now, the question before us is, what are we providing the market to operate on? What are the guide rails? And that's what we are talking about. Have we given a clear signal that this is the reliability? So, for example, in the case of February, it would have been the market has to offer reliable supply in the event that was as severe as the winter storm and lasted as long and as deep it did. That is the type of guide rail we are talking about. And then you provide those signals, those guide rails, and provide payment mechanisms and incentives, and then you still have to leverage. There's no way I can imagine, not using the power, creativity of the markets to help us achieve that.
So in order to have reliability, you have to have accountability. So we have these regulatory agencies, whether it be the Public Utility Commission, and we also have board members of ERCOT, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas. But it seems like certainly before the winter storm, and we had all those resignations afterwards, that we may have had is this picture-perfect case of regulatory capture by the oil and gas industry, Moes.
Yeah, I talked to one person who referred to it not as regulatory capture, but as regulatory fusion. I mean, in a lot of cases, when you look at our state agency that regulates oil and gas, which is kind of mysteriously named the Railroad Commission of Texas, The regulators, the elected officials who control that agency are absolutely upfront about their view that their job is to promote the industry, and in some cases, and often I would say, to protect the industry. So these are two objectives, both to regulate and to protect, that seem at odds with each other. And what we saw after the blackout was these state regulators running defense for specifically for natural gas suppliers who clearly played a role in how severe the crisis became. This is a political question, right? As much as it is a question of regulation, if it is your position that, you know, that's the kind of a fox guarding the henhouse situation, well, then you need to change. You need to change the politics of that so that you have more faith in the agency to create reforms. Today, just interesting that you bring it up, because just today, the Railroad Commission voted on new rules about when natural gas suppliers might be shut off or not during a blackout, which is to say when they would lose their electricity during a planned blackout. These are the types of reforms that are coming out of the February crisis that may assure better gas supply during future winter storms. But the question then becomes, do you trust this agency to enact the necessary reforms to actually reach that end? And that's really what we're seeing. We're seeing a debate around that. We're seeing critics say they don't think that the commission has it in it. And we're seeing other people, like the governor who you quoted, saying, no, this is going to be okay. We're going to fix this thing.
Varun Rai, during the initial talking about the winter storm, we heard from Governor Abbott blaming green energy, renewable energy, wind and solar for the power outage. We know that wasn't true, and that's been pointed out, but still we hear that over and over again. So is that still not true? And we also hear from President Joe Biden, he's calling for major clean energy investments. He wants to see 45% of the U.S. energy supply by 2050 coming from solar, compared to less than 4% today. So are we? Do you see that as doable? Is that an opportunity for Texas? Is that going to help us with energy reliability?
Great question, Dave. To your first question, all sources of generation had difficulty, be it wind, solar, coal, nuclear, natural gas. You know, and I'm talking about the winter storm and what happened to supply. All of them suffered. What was expected of wind and solar was already not a lot, because normally they don't supply a big portion during those days and months. And overall, in the balance, it's a known fact now that natural gas-based generation, both power generation, but also what happened to the natural gas supply system, that was the predominant cause throughout the week. So that's been a known fact, and there are many reports out there. To your second question on the federal administration's focus on solar and opportunity for Texas, that's a big one. That's a global momentum, both economic forces as well as technological forces, and combined with social and environmental preferences that we're seeing. Texas has a huge opportunity there, and we have seen a lot of growth in all sorts of generation. The one thing to keep in mind, that Texas electricity market is driven by demand, and we have been seeing growth in demand, and it's expected to grow. So there is space for everybody, and including that of solar. But we have a lot of great resources here in this state, and it can bring in revenues for the state, our people, as well as really supply a diverse source of generation if we are able to capture that. So we should embrace it and all the good things that it enables for us in Texas.
Moz Bucel, during the big power failure, the number has fluctuated in the number of people who have died. I've seen over 170 is the number I'm kind of seeing most often now. What are you working with?
I mean, again, sorry to say that I work with a variety of numbers just as you do, because there doesn't seem to be any one number that is satisfactory. On the high end, we saw, I believe it was BuzzFeed, did an analysis of excess deaths, right? So just kind of looking at how many more people died in this time than would have otherwise been expected.
Yeah, they think they came up with 400.
It was hundreds and hundreds more than anything we saw from the state. And some people wonder if there is a real desire to to arrive at an accurate accounting, because obviously there would potentially be a political price for that. Any way you cut it, these stories are horrific, heart-wrenching, and unacceptable. That in the wealthiest country in the world, in the state in that country known as the top energy producer in that country, that we would see. I mean, it's unacceptable anywhere, but just so shocking.
Right. So in the next half hour, we're pivoting to talk about climate change vulnerable populations. And so, Mose, is there anything we can look at? The number of people who died in a winter storm, we can go with the BuzzFeed number-ish, like, you know, 300 people maybe. Is that who were those people?
I think that it is safe to say that these were populations that it generally speaking, who were already disadvantaged, right? I mean, you saw a lot of people whose homes may not have been adequately insulated. If you're in that situation, you're going to be more susceptible to hypothermia. There were a lot of also carbon monoxide deaths for people just trying to struggle to find ways to heat themselves outside of the traditional ways after their power went off. And when you if you step away from the question of who died and just look at who has been most, you know, most financially and physically and socially impacted by this, again, it is those communities who are already at economic disadvantage and social disadvantage that are left paying the greatest cost, having trouble paying their bills because they couldn't afford fixing their house after this storm burst people's pipes and ruined their living situations.
Varun, we also have a situation where Texas is one of the biggest states for energy consumption. As we talk about the supply and demand, should we also be focusing on how do we get Texans to do better with conserving power?
Absolutely. That is one of the biggest opportunities looking forward, and I'm you know really thrilled to see that the commission is paying a lot of attention to that. It's really open to that and going to push a lot. That's a huge opportunity, and if we don't do well, as we did not do during the February system, leading to the system as well as during the system, then you know we will continue to face issues like this. But I don't think we need to go there. I don't think we will go there. Conservation, energy efficiency, what we can do to reduce our demand and manage our usage in a better way, it's going to be a huge part of the story here.
But we're still seeing the electrification of our economy, of our transportation system, more people still moving to Texas. Varun, are we getting the grid, not just for the winter storm, but for the grid that we need in 10 years?
Very big question. The answer is that we are making progress toward that. What you're talking about, Dave, is a dramatically much larger and more complex electrified system. We will have to wait to see what comes out of the rulemaking, what types of standards and what types of planning criteria do we plan against, and see if that is aligned in the right direction. I think it is directionally in the right direction, but talking about next 10, 20 years and a much more electrified system, we have more time and work to do before we can answer that question.
And in the meantime, everyone should invest in some good wool socks for this winter because we don't know what to expect. I want to thank you, Mose Bischel, KUT. He's got the podcast, The Disconnect, Power, Politics, and the Texas Blackout. Varun Rai, PhD. He's at the LBJ School of Researching, Professor of Public Affairs and Director of the Energy Institute. When we come back from the break, we're pivoting towards climate change and vulnerable populations, low-income communities of color. Why are they considered expendable as we deal with the effects of climate change? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.